Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast. This is episode number 99, and it is a very special episode because the team are back. The boys are back in town. The spin cycle is here. We have regurgitated a...
Wow.
regurgitated is probably the right word. Regurgitated a format that never really worked in the first place, but fuck it, let's do it. And I am welcoming back on the show the most famous redhead in Brisbane, our own firelighter, Dr. Edwina Luck from QUT.
Hello.
And how to describe this man?
Legendary.
Handsome.
Failed. Devilishly good looking.
Brisbane's own Sarah Palin. our very own failed political candidate.
Aww.
We had to bring that up.
Of course, of course.
And we'll talk about that in a second, but welcome back to the show, Patrick Condren and Dr. Edwina Luck.
Huzzah! Great
it's
to be back.
It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. Not long enough in my book.
Number 99. Congratulations, Simon.
I know. Can you believe that?
I can honestly say I have not listened to any episode that I've not been a part of.
I don't know why I completely believe that as well. Yeah. I completely believe that. Edwina, what have you been up to since we last spoke?
I'm back at QT. We're sort of half at campus and half not. My sixth edition of my integrated marketing communications textbook is out, which is very exciting. And the best thing is that we got in some COVID stories and cases. So that's really exciting. That's my big news.
And Patrick, aside from failing at politics, I like to say, as a lifelong LNP voter, or almost lifelong LNP voter, I did actually vote for you, and I'm quite proud of that fact.
Why did you vote for me?
Because I thought you would have done a bloody good job.
Yeah.
And it was something that I never sought. I didn't go out and want to be a political candidate. But I spent the best part of 30 years covering politics. And when I was asked if I'd like to have a crack, I thought, well, it'd be interesting to see what it's like from the other side. Mm. I've never been a political Kool-Aid drinker. you know, I signed up to the party the night before that we announced that I was running. And it was a fascinating experience. We got COVIDed out in the end. A couple of things went against us. The state government promised to introduce compulsory preferential voting in line with what happens in the state arena. That didn't happen. That worked against us. But, you know, the last 2 weeks we couldn't do any public events. It was the start of the pandemic. And no one knew what was happening. No one knew where it was going. And people were terrified. And in the end, nothing changed. But, you know, if I had my time again, I would happily sign up.
So you'll throw your hat back in the ring?
Oh, no. If knowing what I know now, if we went back 12 months and they approached me and said, I'd still say yes.
Right.
But you know, I always maintained that it was a one-off thing, and I had a ball, and off we go.
But I think the big positive to come out of it is one of our mutual friends, Jaunty Bush, has now been elected to state government, hasn't she?
Yes, in the electorate of Cooper. So she ran in Anagra and did very, very well in the council election and missed out knocking off Councillor Andrew Wines. But, yeah, I think a blessing in disguise. I was handing out some how to votes for her at the pre-poll and having a yak to her. And I said to her, you know, I think it's a blessing in disguise that you missed out on the council election, because now you've got a great opportunity, and she'll be terrific for that electorate. She'll be terrific. She'll be a terrific politician.
Future state leader?
Too soon to tell. As a newbie, she's got a lot of work to do in terms of building up her internal political cred. So, I mean, you wouldn't rule anything in or rule anything out, but there is a long line of people ahead of her that want to be the state leader.
I can imagine, and I bet they're all willing to stab each other in the back for it as well. So anyway, so we're going to talk about fake news because it is at the 13th of November, probably the most appropriate thing that we could possibly talk about, given that we have a journalist with us and a lecturer in marketing. But we're going to talk about fake news and then its impact on marketing, which kind of seems a bit of a strange thing to talk about, but I'll explain that a bit later on. The first thing I wanted to ask you guys is, when you hear the words fake news, what's your definition of it, Edwina?
Okay, so for me, it's misleading. It's something that isn't true. And you really need to question and go to a couple of sources to actually find out the truth. So it's actually, in a long answer, it's taking your time away from your busy day and you're actually having to think about something, a fact or something that you've read or seen, and you go, actually, I'm questioning that. I don't believe it. So, yeah, it's misleading.
What do you think about it when you hear those words, Pat?
Donald Trump misinformation campaign is what I hear. As someone who has worked in the media and been at press conferences where, punters who might sign up to a particular political party whose leader I am questioning, get cranky when the leaders get asked questions. So, and have a go at the journos. So I can understand, I suppose, a little bit of why, particularly people in the US are cranky at the news media because Donald Trump calls fake news when the news doesn't suit him.
I
don't necessarily believe that it is fake news, but whenever I hear the term, to go back to your question, Simon, whenever I hear the term fake news, I automatically think of, Trump misinformation, Trump telling lies to protect himself.
Yes.
And
yes.
Can I just carry on with that one, Simon? I read something really interesting, and it said that Trump... Actually, it's not about fake news. It's about false speech and false tweets. And it's this whole distortion of the truth. And agreeing with you totally there, Pat, about the, their...
I thought you'd forgotten my name there for a minute.
I did.
Very, very hurtful. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. It's too soon to start drinking.
I've been up rowing this morning, so...
Anyway, so I thought, was she still in the middle of a sentence there? Were you still going there with that?
False. It's false speech, not fake. Yes. Or false tweets.
Yeah. So it's interesting, and there's actually a really good article on the BBC's website about the origins of fake news and all those kind of things, which I definitely suggest reading, and I'll add a link into it to the show notes, and about how it started with a group of teenagers, I think, that were creating fake news websites in 2016. And according to this, it created 140 fake news websites, and they got quite rich off it because obviously they were running advertising on all these sites. So, small Eastern European town, little group of people doing that, and all of a sudden you've got this you've got this kind of new expression into our vocabulary. But to me, it's about people using that term when facts or a narrative doesn't necessarily suit their terms. And I think the scary thing for me with fake news is it's now everybody's using it. Everybody is using it, whether they're on the left or the right of the political spectrum, wherever they are, in order to dismiss a counter argument or a counter belief to something that they hold dear to.
And it's even leached into everyday conversations in people trying to be funny. If we're at home and we're having dinner, someone might say something at the table and someone else quite regularly says, well, that's fake news. And it's an interesting it's an interesting dynamic, and it's all come from the cake hole of the orange Oompa Loompa who won't leave the White House, and it really undermines, and I think that's exactly what he wanted to do. It undermines, or it attempts to undermine, the credibility of the legitimate mainstream media.
And this has been happening for a long time with social media as well. Like, there's a great story, comes from the UK as well, Simon, about, and we can step back. I think fake news has happened, before Trump. He's just sensationalized it and disfingalized it. But there was a restaurant that went just gangbusters on TripAdvisor or whatever the, Amazon,
review site. Yeah.
And it wasn't even a restaurant. It was these guys in the back of suburb, X, and they thought, oh, let's do something fun. And they, made a fake site, fake restaurant, fake meals. The restaurant, of course, was always booked out because there wasn't a restaurant. And so all those, ratings and review sites, a lot of those, they don't want to get bad reviews. So a lot of them were putting up their own fake reviews because they knew their competitors were putting on fake reviews as well about how awful, the accommodation was. And so that's where, it stemmed from as well. So the Oompa Loompa has just taken it one step down.
And given his position as commander in Oompa Loompa Chief, his pronouncements, amplify the misinformation, the catch cry. There was a very funny, if I follow CNN and, there's Jake Tapper and a couple of others that are on CNN who are the targets specifically of Trump's outrage when it comes to what he calls fake news. And there was a young bloke doing a live cross in the US around the election, and a Trump supporter came up behind him and said, "Is this real news or is this fake news?" And the young reporter, in normal times, would get into trouble for this, but a whole lot of people are applauding him. He turned around and said, "Fuck off," and then turned back to the camera. And I think that really sums up where people are at now with Trump's calls of fake news. They're just sick of it.
And the challenge we've got now is that everything, they bundle all of the media in together now. So when you look at the conspiracy theorists on, on Twitter, they're all talking about the MSM, the mainstream media. So they're bundling everything in. And I even saw somebody the other day ranting at Fox News now because Fox is kind of turning on the president. So all of a sudden now Fox is bundled into this mainstream media. And even locally, when you look at the Courier Mail, if you drive over...
Only if you're really desperate.
Well, yes. But, there you go. See, if you drive through Bowen Hills... there's one of the big unions buildings there, and it says on the front of it, they've got one of those big banners up that says, "Is it the truth, or did you read it in the Courier Mail?" Exactly. So even, and I think that's been there. I've got to say, I think that's been there a lot longer than Trump's been in power. Mm. So everyone's now bundling this mainstream media fake news. Nobody believes anything that's coming out of the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. And
I'm going to pluck some numbers out of my backside because I read this the other day and I can't remember the numbers. But all
if it's coming out of your backside, they'll be big numbers.
Yeah, exactly. but I can remember the disparity between the numbers, and what it was about was saying that the amount of people that believed what they read in the newspaper or the media back in the 70s and 80s was round about sort of 50, 60%. Mm. And now I think it was down to something like 18%.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's even less, Simon.
You're probably right. All I remember is that there's this massive disparity between the numbers back then and what it is
and
now.
It's very
but I don't oh, sorry, sure. Where you go.
It's very sad for, say, traditional journos like yourself, Pat, who were respected, and I'm not blaming social media, but social media came along, so we have the rise of just Joe Smith expert, and so I'm even, you say, Simon, mainstream media, I'm going to really put sort of, I'm going to suggest that mainstream media and social media are actually going to be put together. And they are not going to disappear. They are not going away. And so they've got a lot of clout when it comes to the news and the fake news and the falsities that are out there.
Before you go, Simon, I just need to make a couple of points. MSM and social media are inextricably linked these days because mainstream media quotes social media. Mainstream media is on social media, so there's that linkage that lumps them all in together.
They used to rile against social media, and now they need social media.
Yeah. Absolutely, you know they write stories saying a post went viral as if that's news, and it's not. Yeah. The other point I want to make is that the mainstream media should shoulder a lot of the blame for that disparity in believability that you just quoted, those numbers that you just quoted, Simon, because for some time now, and it's one of the reasons that I left Channel 7, is because there is this abdication in newsrooms of any editorial integrity. And there's a whole lot of reasons for that, partly because there's all this news, there's fewer journos because they can't afford to buy them. They're all younger journos that just want to be on the TV, and I'll talk about my TV experience, or in the newspapers. And so there's less oversight. There's less old blokes like me, fewer and fewer old blokes like me that can mentor these young journos. So the stuff that's going on the TV is absolute twaddle on the TV news, absolute twaddle. Back in the day when there was, 60 or 70% believability, there was a series of processes that went through before stuff made it into the paper or made it onto the TV. And those processes are gone these days.
Look, I wrote down that earlier on when I was thinking about this was it's almost as if the media have forgotten how to report without Twitter.
Yes.
And if all of a sudden yesterday, tomorrow we took away, we took away Twitter and Facebook from them, they'd all be sitting there going, right, what do we do now?
Yeah.
You know, and because they use, because Twitter and social media has become this, crux for them, now they need it more and more, but they use the views that they see on these social media channels, which are becoming more and more polarizing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much you guys use social media. I know we obviously talk on Twitter, but I mean, I deleted the Facebook app the other, 4 or 5 months ago. I very rarely use that now. Yeah. I've been trying to get off Twitter. It's
a terrible place to be.
It's horrible.
But from a small, now I do media consulting nowadays. So I need to be on social media for my business.
Yeah.
I can't afford not to be on it because I need so that's, I have a Facebook business page and I've got my Instagram and I've got Twitter. But it's almost like what's the cliche? It's a necessary evil for someone in my position to be doing that, and I would imagine for you guys as well, whether it be academia or similarly in a business situation, where you have to be part of this, and you can't tell me that regardless of how hard you try and divorce yourself from the cesspool that is, for example, Twitter, some of it will inevitably leach into you as a person.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you look at people that get turned upon, like Dave Hughes the other week, for making a simple statement and questioning about what was happening
for him to say.
Well, absolutely. But why all of a sudden does everybody feel the need to turn on him? And then, for a guy that's done nothing but, I mean, he's not done anything bad for years and years and years. He's a fucking comedian. He's on TV.
Magda got it, the month before. Yeah. So
it's almost they start eating themselves. Do you know what I mean? It's like because they, if there's nothing for them to turn on, if there's no fake news for them to turn on, they'll turn on themselves. Mm. It's a horrible, horrible place, and I still to this day I've got no idea what I keep doing on it. I must delete it.
Well, it's interesting you say this because you know, you said, Simon, that you, I mean, I've been wanting to get off Facebook forever too, but I stay there for business reasons. You, Simon, have deleted your account. Awesome. TV networks are faced with this dilemma now, and they have started to stand up to Trump. You know, a few of them, the major ones, you know, MSNBC, NBC News, CNBC, blah, blah, blah. You know, they, when the president was saying, oh, you know, blah, 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 this and that, fact check, they actually interrupted his speech and said, you know what, this large speech, a large part of it is absolutely untrue. And and that was great to read on Twitter.
But, Edwina, they only did that after almost 4 years of slavishly putting his stuff to air. And they only did that when it looked like, when it was almost confirmed that he had lost.
That's right.
So you know, their conversion on the road to Damascus was very late in the day. And they spent, you know, as I say, the best part of 4 years propagating the lies that came out of his gulp.
Move it on here, because I want to talk about potential, you know, solutions. How do we solve this issue?
Well, you know, if you look at advertising and misleading advertisements, that those companies get a fine, or potentially they get a fine. Misleading or false news or fake news, it doesn't get a fine. I don't know how you'd actually police it.
And then you've got the challenge, Edwina, then you've got the challenge of whether it's a fact or whether it's an opinion. And that's, and you know, opinions can be wrong. And if a newspaper turns around and says, well, this is just an opinion, but how do you, can you fact check an opinion?
I don't know.
You can say that the opinion is based on incorrect facts.
Yeah.
and you go back to the Dave Hughes thing to a certain extent. You know, he tweeted that, you know, Biden obviously had issues. Turns out Biden has a speech impediment, and it's very well known, and that he's a stutterer.
I've got to say that was well out of order by Dave Hughes. I was talking about that he'd said something a couple of weeks previously about Dan Andrews down in Melbourne.
Which
they turned on him first for that. That was where I was like, and all he was doing was questioning, you know, how businesses were going to get back on their feet or something like that. But they all went after him completely for that. But yeah, the Biden thing, I get.
I don't. In terms of a solution, I don't know that there is an easy solution because there's the Hannity's of the world, there's the Fox News of the world, there will be Trump TV, which will go about, you know, promoting him and propagating his falsehoods. So I don't think there is an easy solution. I think I don't think there's an easy overall solution. I think people need to take their own individual solutions. For example, you know, you've deleted Facebook. You know, if you don't like what's on Twitter, get off it, leave it alone. So I think individuals have got to make those decisions because of the nature of the internet. You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
I mean, we at university, we have been teaching students about fake news, marketing students, creative industries, you know, potential journos, communication graduates. We've been, you know, you give them these stories and some of them look at you as if to say, no, that's not true. But others are really onto it and say, oh, yeah, we knew about fake news, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I don't know what the answer is either, because sometimes, you know, your brain does not want to compute all of this information and you don't want to go down a rabbit hole and find out five different opinions and find out the truth. So maybe that's why TikTok's doing so well, because people are singing and dancing and you don't have to think about it.
Marketing is all about fake.
Well, do you know what? I mean, this was the point. This is where we wanted to get to with this conversation, was how that sort of fake news has an impact on marketing. And I guess, and I think for me, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, brands could say anything, right? And nobody would really question them. You know, Apple were making iPhones and no one really gave a fuck where the iPhone came from. And then all of a sudden we realized that, you know, there's factories out there and people are dying in those factories and, you know, or it was kids, you know, underage kids making our trainers and all those kind of things. And then all of a sudden that became important, that brands needed to tell the truth about their origins and where they were made and how they were put together and all those kind of things. And all of a sudden we became we all became holier than thou because we still wanted cheap trainers. We just didn't want them to be made by kids. Well,
I'm kidding. That's a joke. I was joking.
There's a funny joke by Jimmy Carr who says about our trainers being made by kids who are being paid $5 an hour. And he goes, I can't help thinking. He says, oh, we've been overcharged for our trainers.
He's very funny, Jimmy Carr.
I know. Yeah,
marketing is all about fake perceptions. If you drink Coca-Cola, you're all going to be, dressed in swimmers and bikinis and having a wonderful time.
Very happy.
Yeah, but we all wanted.
When the reality is, if you drink lots of Coca-Cola, you're going to be a fat bastard.
We all wanted the truth behind the brands, not just 5-6 years ago. We all wanted to know the reality, the real story. Authenticity. That was the word I was, fighting for there. And Eddie will say this is that everyone now talks about brands that are authentic. But I saw an expose, if that's the best word for it, on TikTok. Now we've come to TikTok the other week about a jewelry brand. And the woman who was creating the jewelry brand these are made in Australia, handmade in Australia. And the woman that had exposed this had found exactly all the exact same items of jewelry in Alibaba. And was doing picture next to picture saying, this is the one that the woman says is made in Australia and this is the one from Alibaba. And my question is, now fake news is such a thing like this, are we going to lose that? Does anybody really care where their trainers are made anymore? Does anybody really care that, there's suicides in the iPhone factory? Have we now gone full circle back to, I just want the cheapest, best product?
This year's a tough one because we're starting to see all the Christmas advertising come out and we're not seeing a lot of the happy, go spend your money, all of that sort of stuff. We're seeing back to basics. And I think brands moving forward have really got to realise and take into account what's happening and what has happened. Because I think our last podcast, it was just at the start of the pandemic, wasn't it, Simon? I think we were talking about
We had a chat.
Hang on.
Well, I just want to say you were invited, but of course you didn't actually reply.
You were busy doing mayor.
Yeah, you were actually busy running for Lord Mayor, failing to be elected for Lord Mayor. Sorry, let's clarify that.
It's very difficult to fail at something like that. You've got to work hard at it.
But you did it.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, Eddie, the rude old white man interrupted you.
Transparency and authenticity are not going to go away. They are just a little bit under the radar at the moment because there's more important things to consider because there's still a lot of people hurting and a lot of people scared. And advertising agencies are scared as well because the message that they send out from a brand really has to have a bit of empathy and warmth and compassion this year. So that's just my take on it at this present moment in time.
What about you, Pat? What do you think?
About what?
Brand stories.
Brand authenticity. Does it matter anymore?
Look, when it comes to marketing, I know I was sounding frivolous before, but marketing is, I think people realise that in the age of the internet, that marketing is, it's a vehicle, and it's not real. It doesn't present the reality of everyday life, and people are finding that more and more during lockdown when they've got nothing better to do than sit on the internet and look around to the dark, deep recesses of the terrible places that you can find on the internet, and that's what marketing to me is. It's the ultimate fake news because I used the example before of Coca-Cola. It's promoted as live your life, have a great life if you drink Coca-Cola, but if you drink a lot of Coca-Cola, you're going to end up with diabetes, a leg amputated, you're going to be a big fat bastard, and it's. I think particularly as we sit here at the moment, I think people are generally worn down by fake news, by marketing. And they'll have to work a lot harder these days to get people's attention.
But it doesn't seem to have the whole fake news and people doing things wrong and, you know, Trump. And you look here back in, back in Australia, and you look at, what's the latest scandal out this week? You know, you've got, $10 million given to Foxtel?
That's been kicking around for a while. I mean, you've got Liberal ministers philandering with their staffers.
Yeah. The Four Corners, yeah.
Yeah, on Four Corners, there's a whole, the news cycle these days is so different. So that appeared on Four Corners on Monday night, and by Tuesday it had disappeared. No one was following it. No one was, apart from the ABC, which was where it got its first run. The news cycles are so fast these days. Like it used to be that you could, if you had a bad news day today, you could hold up something tomorrow and it'd all go away. But
do you think brands can take advantage of that, because they can potentially do things that are inauthentic and potentially revert back to exploiting workers in third world countries? And even if someone exposes them, they can sit there and go, oh yeah, look, we're really sorry, and then 24 hours everybody's forgotten.
Absolutely.
Well, a lot of people do forget, but then there's a lot of people that don't forget. So, while we always have, brands will be creating perceptions for us for forever and more. And some perceptions are great, and other perceptions, maybe they'll get it wrong. But people need products. People need to eat. People need a new Netflix show. People need to, look at Christmas and maybe buying a camper van to go around your state because you're not allowed out. There'll always be, there has to be some truths at the moment, because as you say, what word did you use, Pat? We're beaten, we're tired, I'm not sure the exact word you use, but people are tired. This year has taken a lot out of people. So maybe while they're tired, they can also see through a lot of BS. Everyone's still going to celebrate Christmas. Everyone's still going to, whether you don't have as much food or as many presents, people are still going to be celebrating life, I think, and celebrating being let out. And just, I think it's gone back to basics, looking at more simpler things. And the smart marketers are taking that on. They're looking at those values and saying, we're not going to push BS. We're not going to push our products. We're just going to push a bit of niceness.
Yeah. One of my podcast guests 3 or 4 weeks ago had said, when you communicate with your customers, just tell them what you do. He said he found unequivocally in the digital world, in the first 3 seconds, if you just tell them what you do, so none of this kind of why, deep, meaningful bullshit that you kind of get from people like Simon Sinek, but just say, this is what our product is, and don't overcomplicate it. He just went, that's when we see the best success, is when the consumer gets it really quickly, and stops this kind of, stops this fluffy marketing bollocks, which
all marketing is fluffy bollocks.
No. It's not if you just tell people what you do.
Anyway, so if Coca-Cola went out, and I'll continue the theme, if Coca-Cola went out and hired a whole lot of fat actors with one leg, this is the reality of overindulging in Coca-Cola.
Yeah, but
do you think there's so much Coca-Cola?
Yeah, no, because not everybody overindulges in Coca-Cola. But my point being with Coca-Cola, using his example with Coca-Cola, it isn't about producing that 2 minute. I don't know if you've seen it. There's a Coca-Cola Christmas ad out by Taka Waititi. I can never pronounce his name. The New Zealand director who did one of the Avengers. It's a 2 minute. It's a 2 minute epic about, a little girl trying to get her father home for Christmas, blah, 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 blah. And you just go, that must have cost them millions and millions of dollars to produce. And, the alternative argument is just say, look, Coca-Cola, it tastes really good.
But it tastes really good and will make you fat.
Well, if with overconsumption, yes, it will. With overconsumption, yes, absolutely, it will.
You know, New York City passed bylaws restricting soft drinks being sold in, you know, giant containers.
Yeah, I totally get that. But that's what I'm saying.
Dismiss it as, you know, well, if you drink too much Coke, you got no one. If you're going to have truth in marketing, the truth of it.
Hold on a second there, because I had this conversation on Twitter the other day. I said to somebody, if you drink 5 gallons of water in half an hour, you're not going to feel too good either. It's not going to do you any favors. And water's not, you know, water's not poisonous.
How many people get fat from drinking water?
They die.
But that's what I'm saying.
Overconsumption.
Overconsumption of any product is not good for you, whether it's water or Coca-Cola.
But I can't believe we're having this conversation.
That's the reality. Overconsumption of any product is not good for you.
How many people get diabetes from overconsuming water? How many people are obese from overconsuming water?
How many people don't get diabetes from having a can of Coke a couple of times a week? Many millions.
Wow. And that's exactly what's wrong with marketing.
I'm butting in with you now, because both of you need to go back to theory and literature. If you show the truth to someone, they love Coke, or they love Nike shoes, or they love Apple iPhones, and you tell them something that does not fit in with their realm of thinking and about that brand, they are not going to believe it, and they will turn off. Yeah. It's just like fear advertising for smoking, drink driving, whatever it might be.
Oh, absolutely. Your smoking one, there was a thing I read the other day, and I can't remember which book it was in, but it was about when they started putting the warnings on cigarette packets, it actually increased the volume of sales to people that were to smokers.
And people used to ask for the box with the least
you can't legislate against stupidity.
Stupidity though. Yeah. People are buying hope. They are buying taste.
I understand that, and I get that, but Simon in his Nirvana world, where everything you know, there's truth in advertising. The truth is that if you smoke cigarettes, you increase your chances of getting cancer. If you drink Coke, you increase your chances of diabetes, obesity, amputation. You know, all that sort of stuff. So that is why marketing presents consumers with this manufactured reality, because the actual reality would turn people off the products.
So what we've concluded here is that all marketing is fake news.
So I can understand marketing, for example, that is good marketing, is marketing for adopt a greyhound.
Right. Yes. That's you and your marketing. Bloody greyhound. Christ. All right, we'll wind this up, because I know you've got to go and give blood, haven't you?
One other point I'd like to make on the Coca-Cola theme.
Oh, no.
Santa Claus.
Free Coke or something. What's going on?
The Santa Claus that we see today is a product of Coca-Cola marketing.
Outrageous. Anyway, you've got to go and give blood, apparently, although I've got no idea. Plasma. I've got no idea who would want your plasma. I just want to flick back to the last comment I want, and this is kind of chucking a hand grenade in when, you know, we're going to wind this up, but I've been reading a fair bit recently about democracy as an entity and all those kind of things. And there was a good book I read by a guy called Jason Brennan. It's called Against Democracy. He's actually saying that democracy is now a failed process, and we ought to think about what comes past democracy and replacing it and all those kind of things. Hmm. One of the interesting statistics that he brought forward in this book that really helps me both understand not just fake news, but also marketing as well, is he said, and these are very rough numbers, he said, but you can just about divide the American public into four categories. number one, there's 25% of them are well-informed about politics. And you might argue that that seems quite high, but but the reality is 25% of Americans are well-informed about American politics. 25% are badly informed. Like they know a bit, but they don't know a lot. You know, they kind of got some rough ideas, but you know, they're poorly informed. 25% are completely uninformed. They probably couldn't even tell you who the candidates were. They know nothing about politics. He goes, but the main concern, he goes, the main concern with any democracy and you know, any kind of population who are voting for a president or a prime minister or whatever, is that 25%, that remaining 25% are misinformed. He said, they think they know, they think they are part of the informed, but they're not. And that, to me, is one of the fundamental issues that we have. And the fundamental issue is that 25%, where 15 years ago didn't have a platform or didn't have a way of becoming misinformed, are now not only becoming more and more misinformed and becoming more staunch in their views, but they're able to take that misinformation to the rest of the world now, and they're doing it in spades.
I'd argue that it'd have to be bigger than 25%.
I would probably agree with you that it is getting bigger, because it's what will happen is that misinformed will grow from the not informed section, not from the informed or the badly informed. It will grow from the not informed. So,
and there's some who are deliberately misinformed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, you know, and I think the fear now is that social media is going to continue to expand that misinformed group.
Absolutely,
and Jason Brennan's argument is that why should I, as a human being, as a resident, a citizen of a particular country, why should I have my future decided by people that are so misinformed? And that is the reason, you know, that's one of the basis of his reasons to say that democracy has failed, because we are allowing it to be directed by people who are poorly or who are misinformed about our actual outcomes. So anyway, I just wanted to wind that up.
I've got two words. Katniss Everdeen.
I've got two words. Marketing works.
Pig's ass. Oh. Yeah. That's you're absolutely right, Edwina. Marketing does work, and it works by presenting a false or fake narrative.
They could say anything. Coke could say anything to this 25%. Then they could. They're wasting their money.
If your target market is that 25 misinformed, or well, the 50% is the misinformed or the not informed. Mm-hmm, you're right. Absolutely, Edwina. You could say anything, and they would still buy your product.
Facebook had an all-staff meeting, and Zuckerberg was talking about the election, and there were some people at Facebook, apparently, according to some articles that were written in the last 12 hours, people at Facebook were questioning the validity of the election result based on misinformation that they'd read on Facebook.
Yeah, I know.
Well, if we team Facebook and Coca-Cola together, I mean, those companies and Google, okay, let's do three, they have wanted to rule the world for a very long time. And, you know, Coca-Cola, even in their positioning statements and their, you know, their main company objective has been to make sure that everyone is aware of Coke and will drink it. So the more Coke people drink, the better their bottom line is. And there's a lot of evil in Coke and Facebook the same. And next time we'll talk about.
We can talk about Coke is evil. When we get to the 199th episode, I might have you two back.
God, I might be dead. I'll do it via a Ouija board.
we'll try and do this again, because it's always fun, and I also assume that nobody's going to listen to this, so I work on the basis that we can shout and rant at each other, but actually nobody will pay a blind bit of attention to any of this.
Sorry, who's calling?
Anyway, thank you very much. Go and give your plasma, Eddie. Get back on the sauce. It's almost lunchtime on a Friday. Have a good weekend, you two. We'll see you later. Bye.